2005 House Education Committee is in order. Welcome, panelists and guests. What's my line? Today, another informational hearing, and we are going to be hearing from Pat Burke, Oregon Department of Education, and focusing on and completing, I think, some of the earlier discussions that have been had in regard to the adequate yearly progress, and an overview, focusing on some hot issues right now facing us in this whole process. So, Dr. Burke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For your record, I'm Pat Burke, the Chief Policy Officer of the Oregon Department of Education. And this is a continuation or follow-up on questions at our meeting just a week ago, last Friday, where we were talking about the No Child Left Behind Act and adequate yearly progress along with the Oregon State Report Card. And as you recall, just kind of get us back on the same page, right near the end of that presentation, I pointed out that there were three kind of current issues that are generating a lot of interest, if not controversy. And they are, first, understanding the accountability formulas, and there are two of them, one at the state level and one at the national level, and they sometimes create conflicting information, and that causes some confusion in the public. The second is some confusion about what are the consequences of this, and there are consequences in the state formula and consequences at the national level, and they're not always the same. And then the third item was what about the financing of this, and in particular things that happen to Title I schools and other things that may not happen to non-Title I schools. And those three things are all very hot items, not only here in Oregon, but throughout the United States. And I expect, as you know, we have a new Secretary of Education, Margaret Spellings, and Ms. Spellings has already signaled an interest in more feedback from states on some of these issues. We are delighted to hear that, and we have a very good relationship with the Secretary's representative in Seattle, and we are in regular conversation with our contacts about feedback on what's working and what's not working. So, Madam Chair, what I'd like to do, and I know our time is somewhat short, plus I'm not sure how long my voice is going to last. I have whatever it is that's going around right now. So I'm going to focus on those three issues and provide a little bit more detail about what the nature of some of this controversy is. So, we're going to be talking a little about accountability. And just to remind the committee, I pointed out in the hearing last Friday that both the state report card and No Child Left Behind look at the same basic things in both formulas for accountability, but there are significant differences in how they look at those things. So I'm going to talk first about the Oregon report card. Now, what is on the screen are the two manuals. These are available on our website. One is the policy manual, and the other is the technical manual. So it might help the committee just by way of putting this in some context. The policy manual is about 23 pages long, and the technical manual is about 47 pages long. So one of the problems with this system is that it's complex. So if people are interested in getting more information on how it works, the information is available, but it takes quite a bit of effort to plow through these documents. Participation on the Oregon report card. There are three levels of participation. If a school assesses fewer than 85% of the students in attending the school, it receives an unacceptable rating under the school characteristics component, and its overall rating is unacceptable, regardless of the other indicators in the formula. If the school assesses between 85% and 94.9%, its rating is low, and its school characteristic rating is low, and its overall rating is considered low. And 95% or more is what is established as the cut point for looking at the rest of the elements in the formula. Now we'll be going through the report card first, then I'm going to come back through some of the same issues in the adequate yearly progress formula. Student performance is looked at in the Oregon report card. We look at multiple choice tests in reading and mathematics at the elementary level, and we take an average in the most recent report card of the 2002-03 data and the 2003-04 data. At the high school level, we look at both the multiple choice tests and what are called the performance assessments. Those are in writing and what's called math problem solving. But as you're aware, and we've discussed with the committee in the last spring, we did have a problem with the 10th grade math problem solving assessment, and it was not used in the formula this year. But the important thing here, which I would like the committee to keep in mind, is the use of averages over time, 2002-03 data, 2003-04 data. Behavior is rated in both formulas, but in my view, neither the state report card nor the adequate yearly progress calculation really looks at student behavior. What it looks at is attendance and dropout rates, and I would argue that neither of those things really represent student behavior. The attendance rate under the state report card is the average attendance rate, 2002-03 and 2003-04, and the dropout rate is for the school year. And it looks at the rates from 0102 and 0203. I'm talking now about the most recent report card. Now, for right now, the important point here is the use of the average over multiple years and the single year dropout rate. And I will come back to that. There is a significant difference in the adequate yearly progress formula. Finally, in the Oregon report card, an improvement score is calculated. So the first step is student performance, student behavior, and improvement are calculated separately. So how is that improvement ranking calculated? It's based on a four-year improvement on the multiple choice tests and attendance and dropout rates. So it looks at those three data points over 4 years and looks for patterns of improvement. For example, on the academic progress measure, the performance measure, 4 years of data are looked at. The oldest two-year averages are compared to the most recent two-year averages, and the difference is calculated, and then we look at growth over time, over that four-year period of time. So that goes into the improvement rating, and that's combined with the other three. So you then there's a formula for this that does the mathematical calculation, and you end up with an overall rating. So the overall rating is a combination of four pieces of information: student performance, behavior, improvement, and the average of those comes out to the overall rating.
Dr. Burke, your previous slide showed two components. And okay, attendance and dropout rate.
Right.
That comprises student behavior. Okay, so now spring
the forward. The attendance is used at the elementary level, Madam Chair, and the dropout rate is used at the high school level.
Mm-hmm. I see.
We don't have a dropout rate calculation below the eighth grade.
Okay, so either of those components, either attendance or dropout rate, whether in grade school or the high school level, are the factor that is considered to determine student behavior.
That's correct.
Okay.
And obviously one of the elements of confusion of that is people don't normally associate attendance with behavior. But part of the problem here is what can we measure accurately on every school in the state? So, for example, how schools treat suspensions for a behavior problem can vary from school to school, even within the same district. So the number of suspensions is available to us, but it's not as reliable as the attendance information that's reported the same way by every school every day. So we use attendance as an indicator. Now, there are some statistical correlations between kids who come to school every day and having fewer discipline problems versus kids who cut school a lot and have more discipline problems. But that can also be confusing if you have a student with chronic illness, for example, and might be out of school for illness purposes. We've also seen some patterns from school to school based on local community norms. I know this may sound unusual, perhaps not, but hunting, for example. The elk season is a very popular thing in some parts of the state and not in others. So you see in some schools in the state at certain times of the year, students taken out of the school by parents for other family and recreational reasons. Sometimes family vacations are not scheduled around the school year. So there are a variety of things that influence student attendance. But it is something that we can measure pretty accurately from school to school in the state.
And that having been said, and you used the term a couple of times, the behavior, student behavior, in no way is correlated to the discipline component.
That's correct. And that's one of the elements, Madam Chair, that we think is confusing in the formula. Same thing happens at the federal level, and I'll get to that in a moment. So as I was saying, the overall rating is a combination of the student performance rating, the student behavior rating, and the improvement rating. Those three things go together and they create the overall rating. And the legislation that established the Oregon Report Card requires us to rank every school in the state from unacceptable to exemplary. There's a 5-point scale, and these numbers are ranked on a scale, that final designation is published in the report card. The consequences in Oregon for this are what I describe as two bookends on a shelf where there's not a lot in the middle. The legislation that created the Oregon Report Card requires that schools that receive a low or unacceptable ranking, that we identify them no later than January 30th, and that the district must notify the public in writing by no later than March 31st of the same year. And the local district is required to submit a revised district improvement plan, a plan of correction, by June 30th of the year in which they are identified. That's what's in the statute. In the administrative rule, you see the citing of the administrative rule there. Now, we, in a desire to make this more relevant to planning, the earlier information you have, the better your planning can be, and to try to bring this more in line with adequate yearly progress, we accelerated this January 30th date this year. We actually published both the report card data and the adequate yearly progress data in the first week of December. Our goal next year is to have that information out by the first week of November. Now, in the compliance standards, this is Division 22 of Oregon Administrative Rule, there is another way that accountability is addressed. The state compliance standards, and this is where, for example, the most recent concern was the length of the school year in districts because of budget purposes, that may have had to shorten the school year. The length of the school year is one of these Division 22 standards. If a district is found to be substandard on a Division 22 finding, and the analysis is done by desk audits, by face-to-face visitations by members of our staff, as well as a letter of assurance that must come in by February 1st every year from the superintendent of every district, asserting that all of the Division 22 standards have been met in the district. If the district is unable to meet one of those standards or more, the superintendent submits a plan of correction and an indication of when the district would be back up to standard.
Dr. Burke, and Division 22 standards are the state mandate section.
That's correct. Division 22 of Oregon Administrative Rule, sometimes called the compliance standards, Madam Chair. It covers a wide variety of things, school day, school year, the curriculum, the number of minutes of and hours of instruction that are required to offer credit. It's where all of the standardization of the schools in Oregon, they're contained in Division 22 of Administrative Rule. Now, if the district is found to be substandard, and that requires a ruling from us, they have 90 days from the date of the ruling to submit a plan of correction. If the finding is not corrected by the end of the second year, so let's say sometime after February 1st, we notify a district that it is substandard, it has 90 days to submit a plan, and then a year to implement that plan. If at the end of that next year, the district is still substandard, the law specifies that we withhold state school fund from that district. And that's what I mean by the bookends here. On the one hand, you have submit a revised plan, district plan, and on the next major consequence is we take all your money away. Now, fortunately, we have never actually had to remove state school fund money from school districts, but you can see that it does not really put you in a correction or improvement planning mode. You either have what is a relatively minor consequence, revise your plan, or the next step is we take your money away. And somewhere in the middle there needs to be more of an emphasis on continuous planning for improvement. The district, the legislature in the last session, by the way, this is an important point. There was a law passed in the last session that authorizes the state superintendent to grant a third year waiver under certain circumstances. This was particularly an issue because we had two districts that were potentially going to be unable to come back to a full school year after having had a shortened school year for two consecutive years. If they had done that in the second year, we would have been in a position of having to declare them substandard and taking their state school fund away, which seems counterintuitive if the district is having budget problems, that we would then take all their money away. So the legislature passed a bill that would authorize the state superintendent to grant a third-year waiver. Fortunately, in that next year, we did not have to face that because the districts were able. We did not have a district that had to offer a shortened school year. So we dodged a bullet there. So, excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm now going to turn to adequate yearly progress and the accountability formula under No Child Left Behind. This is the cover of the what every state in the United States was required to do, what's called an accountability workbook. You can see that our workbook, and this is not unusual, states have done this, it has actually been revised a couple of times as we've implemented No Child Left Behind. And there are 10 guiding principles contained in here. They are established by the U.S. Department of Education, and every state responds to them. So what are these same factors of participation, performance, behavior, and consequences look like under No Child Left Behind? First of all, 95% of students have to be assessed, and that 95% criteria has to be met for each subgroup. This is very different from the Oregon report card. So 95% of African American kids, 95% of limited English proficient kids, 95% of students with disabilities. All subgroups have to achieve that 95% ratio. And as I explained in the last session, in our last meeting, this is, if you recall, I used the term a conjunctive model. If you fail one part of it, you fail it all. And there are 60 different data points in the formula. The performance requirements are that each subgroup must achieve in the last 3 years a performance level of 40% or more, meeting or exceeding standard in English language arts and in mathematics. It must be in both, and it must be each subgroup, and each subgroup has to achieve that 40% ranking or more. The science assessment, as I talked about in our last session, is going to be added. It actually is up and running in Oregon. It's required of all states by 2007. That threshold must increase over time until 2014 to target 100% proficiency. So beginning this school year and for the next 3 years, the threshold is increased from 40% to 50%. And I explained a little bit in the last meeting about safe harbor, and that's the process of meeting standard by reducing the number of students who did not meet if the subgroup did not achieve the 40% threshold. The behavior indicator under No Child Left Behind is also similar to Oregon. It uses attendance, and it uses the state average attendance at the elementary and middle school level, and that's 92%, which I think we should feel pretty good about. 92% of Oregon kids come to school every day, and that's a very good sign. And then the four-year graduation rate. This requires a little bit of explanation. The four-year graduation rate is a formula established by the National Center for Education Statistics, and No Child Left Behind requires states to use it. So whereas the Oregon report card uses the one-year dropout figure, the No Child Left Behind Act uses the four-year graduation rate, and they're different numbers. The four-year graduation rate asks a very basic question. Of the students who started in ninth grade, how many of those kids 4 years later graduate from high school with a standard high school diploma? I said a mouthful there. It sounds like it's pretty simple. But, for example, students with disabilities who graduate with a modified diploma are taken out of this calculation. Students who complete a GED program are taken out of this calculation. Students who die are taken out of this calculation. Unfortunately, we have a number of medically fragile students who do not make it through high school. So there are a number of characteristics that come out of this number. The overall state average last year was 68.7%. You have a copy of the state report card. This is explained in detail in the state report card. But No Child Left Behind requires that to be the measure of behavior, high school completion. Improvement. As you recall, the state report card looks at 4 years of data over time. Improvement is not calculated in AYP, with the exception of safe harbor. And that's one of the areas of that causes most of the concern. And then finally, consequences. And I talked about this in our last meeting. I won't spend a lot of time on it. No Child Left Behind specifies 5 consecutive years of escalating consequences over time, from being on notice to offering choice of transfer, supplemental services, corrective action, and restructuring. And, oh, I just noticed, I apologize. There's a typo there. That should be year 5 and not year 4. I apologize. Now, paying for this School districts do not receive additional money. They do set aside 15% of their Title I allocation to pay for the consequences. For example, school choice. That might require buses, it might require bus passes in some cases, and the school district can use its set aside of Title I funds to pay for those consequences. So, what do we have? We have two systems that look at similar factors, but look at them slightly differently. The report card looks at growth over time, adequate yearly progress does not. The Oregon report card uses multiple indicators in what's called an index system. The No Child Left Behind Act uses a conjunctive model where if you fail one part of it, you fail it all. The report card, by the way, using an index system is sometimes called or referred to as a compensatory model, meaning that you could be down in one area but up in another area, and since it uses a formula over time, that influences the rating. That's not true in the federal system. Another point about the state system and growth, the state system actually rewards schools in the financial formula, in the accountability formula, for students who have met standard and have now grown to exceeding standard. We proposed that in our original application to the U.S. Department of Education, and were told that we could not do that for AYP. So, for example, I think a question that many parents have is, so my kid met standard, but I expect my kid to continue to grow and to continue to make progress. The Oregon report card measures that. The adequate yearly progress formula does not. So that's one of the areas that we think we can improve. The Oregon report card does not disaggregate data or break the data down into subgroups, and that is a requirement of No Child Left Behind. The consequences under the Oregon report card are sometimes considered not strong enough, like submitting your school improvement plan. And unfortunately, the consequences under No Child Left Behind are frequently referred to as being unfair and misleading. So what happens here, that we saw this very clearly this year because we published this information on the same day. So it was run in the newspapers on the same day. So you had schools that could be ranked exemplary under the report card but not make adequate yearly progress. And I guarantee you that's confusing to the public, and I'm sure you've probably heard from constituents about this. We certainly did. How can my school be exemplary and fail adequate yearly progress? And likewise, schools that were not doing very well, maybe satisfactory or low on the state report card, but did make adequate yearly progress. And both of those things are possible when you put these two formulas side by side.
Dr. Burke, I'm sorry to interrupt, but before you continue, the Oregon report card is required by what requirement sets in place the Oregon report card?
It's established in statute, Madam Chair. It's in 327, as I recall. I can get you the exact citing. It was established in statute in 1996, and it requires the department to implement a calculation on these factors and to annually rank the schools in the state and to publish that information publicly and to ensure that it is sent home to every parent.
And it was put into place before the requirements, of course, of the 2002 No Child Left Behind Act,
which was
reauthorized from the 1990 whatever.
That's
six.
Correct.
Okay.
Actually, Madam Chair, it was one of the benefits. It actually helped ease Oregon's implementation of No Child Left Behind because the new federal law mandates that all states have a report card system.
And that's the
Oregon
term they do use, is a report card.
That is correct. They specifically talk about a report card.
And there are certain requirements or data points that are required and some that are allowed to the states to determine.
That's absolutely correct. If you read the federal statute, it specifies what goes into the report card, and those data elements are contained in the Oregon report card.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pat, I know that this has come up regularly, so I'm not asking a new question, but why don't you take the Oregon report card and align it with the NCLB requirements so that the two are, you know, really fit together?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, thank you for the transition, because that is exactly what we're doing. We have established that, and I've given you a handout that explains that a little bit. If you don't mind, I'll make that transition now, and I'll tell you what we're trying to do. So we have a problem here that the report card and the NCLB requirements, neither of them individually provide everything we want. They don't provide disaggregated data. One of them doesn't look at growth over time. And they are both, I think, somewhat confusing in terms of establishing priorities for school districts and schools. We would like a system that looks at both student and classroom level student achievement data. That would be an addition to what we do now. In other words, can we get information right down to the classroom level to make this more useful to classroom teachers? We would like school level planning data for school districts and site councils to be able to identify what their goals should be. And we also want school, district, and state level performance measures for accountability purposes. We want to be able to communicate clearly to the public. We want indicators for future direction. Where do we need to invest in order to improve? Roles and responsibilities need to be better articulated. Who's responsible for what in the system? We have new capacity in the system. I've talked with this committee before about the Secured Student Identifier, or SSID, which now gives us a way of monitoring students any place in the state as long as they're registered in a public school. And we want to be able to provide companion data to support fiscal accountability. Where did you put the money, and what results are you getting with it? So what are we doing? And directly to Representative Farr's question, we are involved in four phases over a two-year period of time. The first is to revise and actually restructure our continuous improvement planning and accountability process. It aligns what had been four different planning processes into a single process. It had been that you would have a plan for your federal programs, an overall district program, a special education plan, and if you had vocational and tech prep funds, you had a fourth plan, and they would all come in at different times on different budgets, and it was driving, frankly, superintendents nuts. And one of the things that we tried to do and have done is integrate this into a single plan where the funding streams, the goals of the district, and the professional development activities come in an integrated fashion once a year. Superintendents are giving us good feedback on that. They appreciate the reduction in paperwork plus the better focus. The second phase is to develop and implement financial analysis procedures. On our website now, there is a policy brief that analyzes the allocation for limited English proficient programs to districts with the percentage of that allocation that was actually spent on LEP programs and the academic results generated. I'd urge you to take a look at that. We weren't able to do that type of analysis until we had SSID and we had better financial information. So we want to expand that type of approach so that we have a better ability to not only provide to you and to the public, but for our own planning purposes, where did the money go? How much money did you receive? What was it received for? What did you do with it? And what results did you generate with it? The third phase, which will probably take until fall of 06, because there's a lot of statistical work Plus, this will require some submission for review to the U.S. Department of Education. But we want to implement a redesigned report card that looks at school and district accountability, that contains growth targets. And let me explain what I mean by that. This is a key area. You understand in the current formula this 40% threshold. So a school for the last 3 years could be at 41% and it would be considered making adequate yearly progress. Another school, and there are very concrete examples of this, that might have started 3 years ago at a 20% level of meeting and grew to a 39% level of meeting, fails adequate yearly progress because it didn't achieve that 40% threshold. We are concerned that that's misleading to the public. One of the schools that was considered meeting adequate yearly progress didn't grow at all, where another school that grew very dramatically is labeled as failure. We think that's misleading. We think that looking at growth over time is an important thing to assure the public and to assure decision makers that schools are making progress. The data need to be fully disaggregated, so we need Representative Farr to add the disaggregated data to the Oregon report card. That will require developing new formulas to do that. And the reason, I believe, is quite simple. Especially in schools that have maybe a low level of diversity, if you're just looking at the average, then it's possible that students with disabilities or students with limited English proficiency or other categories are overlooked in the accountability formula. And you want to make sure that we're successful with all kids, not just the average at the school level, but all subgroups at the school as well. And we want to be able to integrate this with adequate yearly progress. Our ultimate desire here is to have one formula that meets both the federal needs and the state needs. We think we can get there. And finally, phase four would be implementation of a revision of the process of rewards, consequences, and intervention. As I've tried to explain, the intervention processes are very different under the report card and the AYP formula. We would like a single measure of performance and establishing a continuum of intervention for both Title I and non-Title I schools. As I said in our meeting last week, the consequences under No Child Left Behind only apply to schools that receive Title I funds. So a school that did not make adequate yearly progress but is not a Title I school is not required to offer choice or supplemental services. It is only the schools that receive Title I funds that are required to do that. Now, I want to be very clear here. I am not suggesting that we require all schools in Oregon to offer choice and supplemental services. What we are saying is that all schools, regardless of Title I or non-Title I, should be expected to develop a plan of correction and to be able to submit documentation on how they are going to improve. The non-Title I school would be put on the same on-notice provision as the Title I school, and all schools would be expected to revise their plans. And then finally, the funding sources are very tricky here. As I've mentioned before, Title I schools set aside 15% of their Title I allocation. Prior to the last session, there was a school improvement fund in Oregon for schools that were in need of improvement. It wasn't a lot of money. There was about $10 million in that fund. During the five special sessions, that fund was one of the things that bit the dust, and so the fund no longer exists. But it was designed for schools that did not get a lot of extra funding, like extra federal funding, but needed to improve. They could apply for those funds. We've have developed a proposal that probably will more than likely surface in the 07 session. Would be nice if we could do it now, but we're fairly realistic about our current budget situation. What we need is a way to provide targeted financial assistance to the schools that have been identified as not making progress. So it would be a modification. The idea is to modify that school improvement fund from years ago. That fund was open to anybody who wanted to apply. Our suggestion is that you establish a fund for the non-Title I schools who have been identified as being in need of improvement, because it's very hard to do planning and staff development without some available resources. So there's more detail in the handout that I've provided you on what we're trying to do. The four phases that I've been talking about are on page 5 of the handout. If you need to refer to it. And, Madam Chair, I will stop there with an appreciation to the committee for letting me come back and provide you this detail.
Thank you. Are there questions? Come on, Representative Farr, I'm disappointed.
I asked the question of the day, and it was already in Pat's presentation.
And I am hopeful, Dr. Burke, that we would be able to have a copy of your PowerPoint for reference.
Oh, of course.
Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Blank will.
On that, I apologize.
Yeah. I just think it will be good information resource.
I will send it to the administrator this afternoon.
Thank you. No questions?
No.
No questions? No burning issues for you?
Surprise.
Okay, we're going to schedule him on Monday morning then. Well, thank you very much, and
you're
I do
welcome,
hope
man.
You get to feeling better. So
I'm fine. It's just a cold.
Okay.
Thanks, Pat.
I just have one little quick thing to tell you. At our last meeting, you had asked about the parking at Wilson High School, and I spoke to a person up there. That particular day, the students were getting out early.
Oh, great.
So we aren't going to have a lot of students to worry about. They said the majority of the parking is around the back side of the auditorium. There's about 30 spots in front, and if they're full, you just go around back and you cut through back through school.
How long will it take to get to Wilson from the Capitol? Do you have an approximate?
I plan on an hour.
At least an hour.
At least an hour.
You'll make it an hour.
Okay.
Easy.
I think MapQuest says 43 minutes, but...
If you just, like some folks we know, it would be shorter. Some it will be longer. So. Okay. Well, thank you all. Thank you again, Dr. Burke. Feel better. Thank you for coming, those in the crowd. And thank you, committee. Have a good weekend. We're adjourned.
We need-